You're listening to the Business of Craft Beer podcast, recorded live from the University of Vermont's Continuing and Distance Education Department with your host, Greg Dunkley. Whether you're looking to break into the craft beer industry or start your own brewery, this podcast is for you. Each week, we will discuss all aspects of the craft beer industry from sales, operations, marketing, trends, and analysis with industry experts and thought leaders. If you'd like to be part of the show, please call 929-477-1757. And now here's your host, Greg Dunkley.
Well, hello. This is Greg Dunkley here, and we'll be your host for today's Business of Craft Beer podcast. Today we have a guest I've looked forward to having on our show for some time, Steve Young, founder of Cynic, the first ever crowdsourced countertop beer dispenser. Cynic offers us access to fresh craft beer dispensed right from our home countertops. With the growth of tap rooms across the country and growler fill stations providing access to fresh beer, we've been interested in how technology might help to advance the sale of more quality beer, either directly from the brewery to consumer or through retailers who sell growlers. Consumers purchase, of course, beer in bottles, cans, and growlers with some variation on the size of these containers or draft. Yet to date, the knock on growlers is shelf life, typically 2 days at most after opening a container. Just as Keurig revolutionized how coffee was sold for consumption at home or in the office, we've been interested in exploring comparable technologies that can bring local fresh beer into the home. Can such a packaging option be one of the next big things in the craft beer world? Of course, another consideration is the issue of beer pricing, as we've seen more and more craft beer sold at $14 per four-pack or six-pack. Can purchasing beer in larger volume help both the consumer with lower price per unit and help local breweries sell more beer direct to consumers? So I'd like to welcome today's guest, Steve Young, founder of Cynic. Thanks for taking time to join us today, Steve.
Yeah, how's it going?
Great. So as mentioned in the intro, you offer a countertop dispenser for beer that makes it easy to provide taproom quality beer from the convenience of one's home. Can you tell us about Cynic and how you got started?
Sure. Yeah, so kind of an interesting introduction into the industry. My old job, I was actually a stock analyst, and I was fascinated with the industry mainly because of its growth and because of the fact it was comprised of small businesses. And so I just started calling breweries across the East Coast, West Coast, and small businesses. All right, hey, what do you struggle with? Like, what's your main pain point? And surprisingly, the feedback was pretty unanimous, which was essentially, we make great beer, but we can't get into people's homes. And one of the big problems with that was the distribution network. Obviously, it's getting more and more saturated. Distributors have a lot of power. Luckily, the laws are loosening, especially in Vermont, where you're located. But the real core of the problem, though, is packaging. If you can't ship beer directly, and if you can't have that same quality that you get from the tap room, then you really can't solve the distribution issue. So basically, my brother works for Elon Musk at SpaceX now, but we invented this, flexible packaging that you can fill from any faucet. And because it's filled airtight, you didn't need special equipment and therefore got a keg-like shelf life. And so, you know, I asked the breweries, I said, hey, if we made this thing, you know, what do you think of it? They said, yeah, that would change everything, but it's impossible. So we did a Kickstarter. We called it Cynic after all the people that doubted us at the beginning. So it's kind of a play on words off of cynical. And we pre-sold about $750,000 before we launched. But that was really the aha moment that people really want any beer ever made at the highest quality on their kitchen countertops. And so that was about we launched about 16 months ago.
So what do you attribute the overwhelming support you had from the crowdsourced campaign?
So the overwhelm, did you say the overwhelming support from fans or for users?
Well, as I understand it, you guys had a tremendous financial support through the Kickstarter campaign. Can you talk a little bit about what your initial expectations were and what your results were at the conclusion of that campaign?
Sure. So when we first launched the Kickstarter campaign, we actually launched it as a homebrew dispenser, so a way that you can brew your own beer, put it in these special flex kegs, and then you can easily trade it with buddies and, you know, get your own beer on your countertop. And the reason we did it that way is we didn't want to launch right into craft beer because we would have had to answer the chicken and the egg problem. We would have had to get breweries on board in order for customers to be on board, and we would have to show the breweries that they're a customer market in order for them to support it. So, but when we launched the Kickstarter campaign, we actually only sold about $30,000 in the first week. And based on the metrics, we had a 0.07% chance of hitting our goal by the remaining 21 days. And so we pivoted and said, all right, you can get your favorite craft beer in here. And we solved the chicken and the egg dilemma by saying, if your favorite brewer isn't on board by the time we launch, we'll give you your money back. And so that was really that gave the trust and security that, you know, we were going to do everything we could over the year till we launched to get all these breweries up and running. Surprisingly, when the Kickstarter was over, we put together a little pitch deck, you know, a little 3-page pitch deck, and we gave it to all of our backers. And we told them, we said, hey, give this to your favorite brewery, pitch them on Cynic and what we're about. And by doing that, within about 3 weeks, we had 1,200 breweries jump on board with what we were doing. And so that was kind of an overwhelming. Not only were they financially supportive to us to get the vision off the ground, but they were willing to put in their own physical efforts to kind of open up the cause.
So are those folks the Cynic pioneers that you reference?
Yes, those are the pioneers.
Okay.
We still have about 1,500 pioneers to this day that are pretty active.
Okay. So you use local people in their local communities who know their craft beer scene, and you use them to go out and talk to the breweries to get them on board.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
And we even use them too. As you mentioned, you know, one of the things, if you're a backer or a follower of Cynic, you'll know, we have these flex kegs that, you know, they can fill airtight from any faucet. But the feedback we got from customers was people also really wanted to fill growlers. And so that's where the pioneers kind of came in a kind of a crucial moment, was they said, hey, if you can introduce an adapter that would fit on any growler and would allow a growler to work with your dispenser, it would also change the way, you know, we engaged our beer and got our favorite beer. And so the pioneers were the ones that actually thought of this little fitment that would allow growlers to be used. So now you can use these flex kegs or, you know, a standard 64-ounce growler, and instead of getting 2-day shelf life on a growler, we're seeing 30 to 45 days. So that it's really cool that the pioneers were the ones that are coming with more solutions with how they engage the product.
So as I understand it, initially you started out with a 128-ounce bag that fits inside your dispenser, and then, as you described, because of the availability of growlers, you also adapted it so you can use a 64-ounce growler instead of the bag. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So I would say right now we have a little over 7,000 locations filling. And out of those locations, I think about 1,000 of them are actively filling the flex kegs. And so one of the challenges we had, again, was a chicken and the egg problem where some breweries absolutely love the flex kegs. It's a gallon sale. It keeps their beer fresh the way they want it to. You know, they can put their own kind of brand on the flex keg itself. But a lot of brewers, you know, they either didn't see the demand on the consumer side or they just didn't like filling the flex keg. I mean, it is a kind of a 5-minute training process, but when you're, you know, really, really busy, people like to stick with what they know, and that's why we introduced the growler adapter.
Okay. Yeah.
We did not invent the growler.
Yeah. I mean, the other question just has to do with the pricing. How many of your – did you have to work with the fill stations or tap rooms to figure out the pricing for a 128-ounce bag versus what they're familiar with, which is the growler?
Yeah, that was actually one of the biggest reasons for the change to add the growler adapter, and actually something that we learned from with beer and applied to a new wine dispenser we're going to come out with in a couple months. But the price point was kind of a shock for a lot of people. You know, a $15 growler fill is now a $30 Cynic fill. Some breweries would try to alleviate the stress of the shock and say, okay, we'll give you 10% off or something. But in general, we did not tell the breweries what price to charge, what beers to fill. It was purely under their own discretion. And, you know, again, going back to whenever you're paying for a half a gallon at $13, that's way different than, you know, $26.
Yeah, right. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the technology behind Cynic. You know, one of the things that attracted me right out of the gate was your product sits on the countertop, and so I didn't have to sort of negotiate in the family refrigerator to take over part of my beer supply. My wife likes that concept. And I understand that you have that you're, even though I haven't purchased one yet, there are two main components, a cartridge and a dispenser. Can you tell us about the design of this product?
Sure. Well, there are two key factors that, based on other technologies that were already out on the market, we knew to stay away from. So one was the whole core of Cynic is brands. Again, we wanted to give people access to any beer ever made on their kitchen countertop. And so other products you've seen on the market, like Heineken, Miller Lite had a product, Anheuser-Busch had a product, but you could only get their beer, and the assortment was extremely limited. In Heineken's case, it was two different beers. So step one in the design was opening it up to every beer. The second one was we had to free up space in the refrigerator. So, yes, countertop space is very it's a rich real estate. You know, you only have a limited space, especially in folks in big cities like Chicago and New York and L.A. But with that being said, the refrigerator is even more valuable. And so we knew we had to keep the design of it very slim. A lot of people said, well, you know, why didn't you introduce a 5-gallon container? It's because, you know, that's getting you closer to a kegerator, and we wanted to clearly stay away from that. So the ideal volume was a gallon from what we heard, and the design, we wanted to keep it as slim as possible. So we went with a really tiny paintball tank so that, you know, it wasn't taking up a ton of space like a 5-gallon tank or something.
Okay. So I think you addressed the CO2 piece of it, but where do consumers typically purchase those tanks for refills?
Sure. So one of the cool aspects of what we've been able to do with our brand, so we launched again like 16 months ago. Every single one of our sales has been online, and we've spent $0 on digital marketing. So all of our sales, and you know, we're now approaching, you know, 2 million plus just in the last 12 months. All of our sales have just been online and word of mouth, people excited and telling their friends about it. The CO2, we could have done a business model like SodaStream where, you know, you have to pay us for really expensive CO2 refills and we make a lot of money off of that. We didn't want to do that. We didn't want to make the money off the bags. We didn't want to make the money off the CO2. We wanted it to be as easy to use as possible so we could get as many people on our platform. And so you can get the CO2 tank filled at any outdoor supply shop, any homebrew shop, paintball shops will fill it. And there was a little bit of a misconception before, but almost all the CO2 on the market is food grade CO2. There's very little difference between, quote, certified food grade and not certified food grade. All it really depends is how the tanks are cleaned when they're made. And all the tanks are cleaned of all the oil and everything. So we had some people concerned of, hey, if I go to my paintball shop, is this going to be food grade? We have certification that most of it is.
Okay. So I understand that there is a pressure valve that people can manage sort of the foam and carbonation. How are those adjustments made? And is that, different beer styles sort of require some adjustment in terms of the carbonation?
Yeah, one of my biggest regrets, I would say, is allowing the CO2 to be regulated. If I were to do it over, I would have just put it at a kind of a flat 12 PSI and allowed the flow control on the faucet to dictate the flow rate and the amount of foam that came out. One of the things we saw was it confused a lot of people on, what pressure to put the beer at. But, yes, the regulator that's currently in our dispensers, it is a variable regulator. So you can turn it anywhere from, 2 PSI all the way up to 14, 15 PSI. And it typically people know if the beer tastes flat and they'll go back and they'll just kind of turn the knob up a little bit to add a little bit more CO2. But wheat beers have a higher PSI integrated, and you'll get some other beers that you got to keep a little bit lower, a little foam all over the place.
Yeah, okay.
That's one of the things we're working for in the Generation 2 beer dispenser that we're currently designing is the next beer dispenser, which will come out in a couple years. So no reason to wait for it. It's not coming out next month or anything. But it'll actually recognize what beer is inside and automatically change the pressure for that beer. So that's one of the things, when we talk about customer experience and, when we have people support us now, they're supporting us for R&D for future models. So the line of Cynic dispensers are going to keep getting more efficient, cheaper, more engaging for the customer, and also automated. People don't want to play around with knobs and dials. They just want a perfect pour every single time.
You referenced this earlier, the wine dispenser, but are you seeing a similar demand for wine, cider, other products like beer?
I would say even more of a demand on alternative products. And alternative products, they've ranged from wine, coffee, liquor. We got a lot of interest for sake in the Southeast Asian market. But I guess the big difference between beer and wine, if we're just going to juxtapose those two, the biggest difference is the price point. So when you look at beer, a beer is, $3 to $7 on average. So if you order a beer and you don't like it, it's kind of not a big deal. I didn't like it. I'll just drink it and order another one. If you're ordering a bottle of wine, which the average price point is $20+, it's a lot of money down the drain if you don't get one that you like. And so with every subsequent dispenser we come out with, every single one of them, the second beer one, this next wine model we're coming out with, will be data enabled. And it'll tell you exactly why you like that certain brand. So the key is taking out the confusion of drinking. So, people that are new to craft beer might say, ooh, I like this IPA. Well, a rye IPA is completely different from a normal, stone IPA. But, so one of the things we're doing is just adding more data, taking out the complexity, and allowing people to engage in their beverage a lot easier. Right now it's very manual. You got to take a picture of the label. You got to, research it and code it. So that's really, I think this wine model, based on the feedback we've gotten from wineries and customers, I think it's going to make big ripples within the industry.
Although our focus is craft beer, would people for your winery dispenser, they would have to go to a winery to purchase it? I don't, you know, some sort of something comparable to a growler, or how will that work?
Yeah, so luckily the wine industry saw a surge about 15, 20 years ago, and as a result, the laws melted. So the lawmakers saw it was good for small business taxes and agriculture, and the laws completely got wiped off. And so we're actually going to ship wine direct to your door in a special container that we're calling silos. The cool part about silos is they're intelligent, so they have a little microchip in them that interacts with your dispenser. The other cool part about it is, similar to the beer dispenser, you can pour one glass of wine, take out that silo from the dispenser, and it's as if it was never used before. So with wine, when you uncork a wine bottle and you got 3 days to drink it, it's very similar to a growler. We're taking away that sense of urgency of drinking it. You can drink at your own pace. But not only will we ship direct to door, we can automated ship direct to door, either, you know, once a month on your drinking habits, or for people that really love specific wines that they've tried, we can ship, the dispenser will automatically ship wine to your door when it's low. So if it knows that you're drinking at a certain pace and you got three glasses left, you know, it'll have a silo arrive at your door 2-3 days later so that you're never out of stock on that specific wine.
Well, that's pretty cool. So back to beer for a moment. Earlier, you know, I had indicated that one of our interests is to find technology and ways to promote the sale of more beer. We're always interested in sort of, you know, beer trends and the continued growth of the craft sector. And what are you hearing back from producers? You have quite a national network out there. What are they telling you about your product and how it's sort of advancing the cause of selling more beer?
Yeah, I mean, the brewers are 100% on board with our vision, you know, where it's going, what we're trying to do. We stumbled a little bit out of the gate after the launch. With any new product, you're going to have minor tweaks and issues. But now that we got all those fixed, brewers are jumping back on board right and left. And there's other really cool things we're going to be doing with beer predicated around the distribution aspect. So believe it or not, it's actually legal to ship direct to door in a lot of states. No one's doing it right now. So we're going to do those things. Now that we opened up access, every single goal going forward for Cynic is to increase your proximity to beer. So making sure it's at grocery stores, it's shelf-stable, it's shipped to your door, whatever we can do so that getting the best beer possible is as easy as it can be.
So do you, you know, are you seeing any particular trends? You know, we've read a lot about tap rooms and how those have become almost a necessity these days for anyone launching a brewery is to you know, plan on a tap room where you can sell directly to consumers. Obviously, there's an economics involved in that and not paying for distribution, but there's also feedback from the consumer on your products, which is quite valuable. And as tap rooms make available beer to go, are you seeing, you know, your product, even at the 64-ounce container level, is that something you see just growing over time?
Yeah, I think the current beer model will be a nice, slow, self-sustained growth to the second beer model that will come out within a couple years. I can't talk too much about it for competitive reasons, but the second beer model will, I believe, absolutely change the distribution in the beer industry. And so this current beer model is getting people used to the idea that, wow, I can drink amazing beer on my countertop. I don't have to buy a messy, giant kegerator. I don't have to subject myself to flat, skunked growler beer. And, you know, at $2.99 to $3.99 price point, like, you can't really go wrong with an appliance that affordable. You know, we're not asking people to spend $1,000 plus. To answer your question, I'm seeing two major trends, and I'm going to put on, you know, my old job. Like I said, I was a stock analyst. I'm putting on my stock analyst hat right now. The two major trends are these. You mentioned one at the beginning of the conversation, actually, is that you're seeing more and more decommoditization of beer. So beer and wine are actually, when investors talk to me, they're like, beer and wine are completely different. Beer and wine actually are becoming very, very similar. You're seeing higher end price points on beer. You're seeing bombers that are, you know, $25 plus. You're seeing people waiting outside breweries just to pay $100 for a 12 pack of a new release beer. Those are things that wine has done over the year. And so instead of just every beer costing $4 when you go to a bar, you're starting to see these really high end beers emerge at higher qualities. So that's really, really cool. And opposite on the wine side, you're starting to see, you know, very bold wine labels that say cuss words on them. You know, that's, you know, arrogant bastard type of labels. That's stuff that you're used to seeing in beer. So wine and beer are becoming very, very similar. So that's one. The second one, and we've all seen it, is the delegislation on the confines of the beer industry. I think that is the single most important thing to happen for the beer industry, because when you think about it, 10 years ago, growlers were illegal in most states.
Mm-hmm.
Like we can't really fathom that now, but in 2005, 2006, growlers were like illegal. And,
yeah, right.
You know, even in Vermont, I think you all just opened up, you know, a couple growler laws that were very, very goofy in terms of when you can fill, what size you can fill. But there is a massive melting happening, and my bet is in the next 3 to 5 years, beer will be exactly where wine is, where you can ship beer wherever you want to whomever you want. And the advantage of that is, again, going back to wine, the advantage is it's good for small business, it's good for agriculture, because most of the ingredients in beer are locally sourced, and it's good for small business. And so as lawmakers look into that, why wouldn't you want to support those three things in your state? And at the same time, on the small business aspect, you're given a small brewery. You know, if I open up a brewery, you're giving me nationwide distribution from the start. And why wouldn't you want that? You know, why wouldn't you want your small local brewery to in Vermont to be able to sell to someone in Texas? So really, it's about getting the best beer in the most hands as possible.
Yeah.
Great. I wanted to ask you about saw some of your videos, you have a bananas branding for your product. Can you talk a little bit about how that came about?
Yeah, it's kind of a fun story, a little bit scary for me, but so when I started the company, I've self-funded pretty much everything leading up and through the Kickstarter campaign, you know, developing hard goods, technology isn't cheap. And so when we were filming the Kickstarter, I actually spent my last penny of what I allocated in my budget, but spent the last penny on everything I could. And so while we were filming, the videographers said, hey, why don't you put some, you know, sausages or bratwurst on the grill behind you? And I told them, I said, I don't have any money left. And there was a bushel of bananas, whatever you call it, a little pack of bananas, whatever that word is. But there are bananas on the table next to us. And they were like, well, why don't we just put bananas on there? No one will recognize it. And if they do, it'll be funny. And so it ended up becoming this really funny brand that people thought was hilarious. And so everything now in terms of like customer service, you email bananas@cynic.beer, you know. So we've incorporated bananas into our brand just as kind of a funny, lighthearted way of saying, you know, hey, don't take yourselves too seriously type of deal.
Yeah, that's great. again, you indicated that the product is sold online. Can you give our listeners some information about where they would find that link and where they would purchase?
Yeah, you can go on www.cynic.beer, cynic.beer, or you can just go online and search Keurig for beer, and it'll kind of take you to our website. The other thing is we're going to start going into distribution this year. So you'll see us on Amazon. We'll be in traditional retail stores like a Bed Bath or a Target or Brookstone or whatnot. So you're going to see more and more of our dispensers onto the market. But the best way to get it now and in the next couple months is direct from our website. We're running a lot of different specials and deals, and so people can, get it before the summer hits, so they're drinking beautiful beer outside when it's nice and warm.
That's great. So I want to thank you, Steve Young, founder of Cynic, for joining us today. We will have information on our website and our Facebook page. So that if you didn't get that information, you can go to our website and see where you can purchase a Cynic container for your countertop. I wanted to close by just reminding viewers that if you've dreamed about opening your own brewery or are looking for a career change into the craft beer industry, the sponsor of this program, the University of Vermont's Business of Craft Beer program, offers the necessary industry-specific knowledge to make that all possible. Instructors are all craft beer experts from across the United States and Canada. And if you want to learn about the business side of the craft beer industry, the University's of Vermont's program was designed just for that. To learn details, visit us at Facebook/UVM Business of Craft Beer, or you can give us a call at 800-639-3210. And again, I want to thank you, Steve, for taking time out to join us today and go through the details of Cynic, and I wish you the best.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, and congrats on the podcast. I think this is really cool what you do. I mean, it adds a whole nother layer to the beer industry that not many people are touching on, so thanks for doing this.
Well, thanks again for your time. We appreciate it.
Cheers.
Okay, take care, everyone.